You're listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
My name is Diana Galperin, and I work here at the Carnegie Endowment in the Russia-Eurasia program. And I'm so excited to have this event here and very pleased to have you all be a part of it. I had the opportunity to attend the IGF USA forum in the summer, and I was just so impressed by the phenomenal work that goes on in IGF, and I really wanted them to come to Carnegie to talk more about what they do. When we think about internet governance nowadays, it's becoming such a more pressing topic and increasingly important. And so it's great to have this venue here to get all these multi-stakeholders together to be able to talk and share their experiences and decide on the platform to go forward in the IGF International Forum in Baku. It's also exciting for me personally because in the Russia-Eurasia program, I'm working on models for using the internet to fuel social and economic development. And so it's great to see that the conference topic in Baku in November is going to be on sustainable human economic development and internet governance. So with this, I would like to turn it over to Marilyn Cade. I don't think she needs much of an introduction. I'm sure many of you in the room are familiar with her work, but just as a refresher, and her bio was outside, but Marilyn has been involved in probably all the multilateral organizations on internet governance you can think of, from the ITU, OECD, APEC, WIPO, ICANN. Most importantly, of course, for today, she's the chief catalyst of IGF USA, and so is running the show from the USA forum side. And so with this, I'd like to turn it over to her, and we'll get started.
Thank you. I am seeing many friends that have been working already in the IGF USA, and I'm seeing some new faces. And one of the things we'd really like to make clear is that the IGF USA steering group is a totally open steering group, and anyone who is interested in joining that group can do so. Each of the national and regional initiatives, and there are many of them, operate a little bit differently. For us, we treat the IGF USA as a place to convene, to broaden the understanding and the awareness about the multi-stakeholder work that needs to go on in addressing internet governance challenges. And I'm really pleased to be here at Carnegie. And let me just say a word about why. I think that you touched on the fact, Diane, that internet governance is becoming increasingly a topic of interest and focus. But it has really become the chapeau or umbrella term under which we move a lot of other serious policy issues related to who should govern the internet. And we happen to practice the philosophy in the United States that we believe in a multi-stakeholder approach that is open and inclusive. But that is a new form of interaction in many countries, and it is not always easy to understand. So within the IGF USA, we're hoping to continue to broaden and deepen the awareness, even within the United States. The concepts of internet governance and the Internet Governance Forum are not well understood outside of a small group of highly interested folks. So one of our challenges moving forward from here, and again next year, will be to work together to try to do more visible activities. Today is about a briefing on the road to Baku. We will be in Baku, Azerbaijan, and you're going to hear both from two speakers who will say more. And so I'm going to save any other comments to a later section. Today, we'll hear from two speakers, and then we're going to have a round of quick updates from those of you who are building workshops and participation activities and pre-events in Baku so that you can get a flavor of what is going on in this very exciting forum. At this point, I'd like to introduce our chief champion of the multi-stakeholder activities and of the IGF, Ambassador Phil Vivier. Phil was appointed and confirmed as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State and U.S. Coordinator for International Communications and Information Policy in August of 2009. And I think when he came into that position, he didn't understand that somewhere in the invisible print it said, and become the angel supporting the Internet Governance Forum. But we certainly look to him for that thought leadership and for his major contributions in the work that he does in the rest of his day job at State as well. Phil.
Thank you very much. And I, before I begin any other remarks, I want to underscore what Marilyn just said. There were so many things I didn't understand when I took the job that it's really hard to list them all. I'm now materially older, unfortunately not much wiser. I want to thank you, Diana, very much for and the Carnegie Endowment for hosting this, and obviously want to thank Marilyn for her efforts as probably the human instantiation of IGF USA, person who, without whom, frankly, our participation here in the United States would be materially reduced. And so we owe a very great debt of gratitude to Marilyn for her her efforts past and ongoing and future for doing all this. And I'm also delighted to share the stage with the distinguished Deputy Chief of Mission from Azerbaijan. I'm going to make a few random comments about the IGF, things that many of you would know, but perhaps not all of you, and it's important, I think, to have a little bit of an understanding about this. First and foremost, we owe a very large debt of gratitude to Azerbaijan for hosting this event. The event is hosted each year by a different country. It is an enormous undertaking, expensive, the administrative aspects of it, quite extensive, and this is a true contribution by Azerbaijan to the set of values that we are trying to promote and extend in the IGF. Secondly, it's important to understand, is obvious, I'm sure, to any of you who've been to an IGF, but it will become obvious to those of you who go for the first time. This thing is a remarkably, in one sense, remarkably well-organized, unorganized event. It is a very antithesis of anything that's hierarchical. And from that perspective, we in the U.S. government insist, absolutely insist, that we do not have a delegation. We have U.S. government officials who attend. We obviously have many private sector representatives who attend, but we all attend as equals on our own with no hierarchical pretensions associated with our participation. That said, we are expecting a very substantial number of U.S. government officials to attend. This is a reflection of the value the U.S. government places in the IGF, as well, for reasons I'll get to in a moment, of the value that we place on our government's relationship with the government of Azerbaijan. And although we have no hierarchical pretensions, it warrants some saying that tomorrow we're going to have a meeting of senior government officials interested in this to compare notes about what we're going to be doing in Baku. This is a celebration as well as an instantiation of the multi-stakeholder model, the multi-stakeholder approach. We are truly honored by the presence of Steve Crocker here, the chairman of the board of directors of ICANN, probably the single most instrumental of the multi-stakeholder organizations that has grown up around the internet among the specialized institutions that is responsible for making the internet what it is today. But it is the case that if you look at the internet governance forum, it is probably the single most pristine or pure instance of this model. It is done entirely on a voluntary basis. It has been remarkably successful in terms of bringing people who are interested in the internet from all over the world. It is something that is enormously valuable for those of us who have had the good fortune to have attended multiple of the IGF meetings for something like the following. Each year, it turns out, there is a rather different set of preoccupations. And these things become obvious as we spend our time in the various sessions that have been organized, but also in the hallways as people from all over the world greet one another as old friends on an annual basis. But it helps very much in terms of informing what are the important issues, what are the things that we've achieved, how have they been achieved, what do we need to address in order to do better. It is from that point of view, an absolutely remarkable undertaking, and one that, which again, we in the U.S. government assign great value to. The issue of internet governance is an extraordinarily important one intrinsically, and for reasons I'll get to in a moment, one that seems to be a very decided preoccupation these days. As I mentioned, the governance of the internet really has devolved to a whole series of specialized institutions that have grown up, the Internet Society, ICANN, the Internet Engineering Task Force and Architecture Board, the World Wide Web Consortium, and a whole range of others in addition to the IGF. This style of governance for something as important as the internet creates a fair amount of discomfort in many places in the world among governments. And the discomfort stems from a variety of sources, but it's easy to specify a couple of them. One is the internet is enormously important to everybody on planet Earth at this point, and it becomes more important every day. And a lot of governments find it quite anomalous that something as important to their societies, to their citizens, to their economic and cultural well-being seems to be outside of the control of national governments or any intergovernmental organization. Second, there are governments around the world that for a variety of reasons, some of which it's easy to be sympathetic to, some not, who are very concerned about the uncontrolled flow of information into their countries from across the borders or even the uncontrolled exchange of information within their borders. And from that point of view, they are anxious to find ways to essentially stem the flow of unwanted information into their countries and believe that an intergovernmental organization, as compared with the present effective but somewhat anarchic arrangements, is to be preferred. We in the United States are very committed to the arrangements as they are now for a fundamental reason, which is that they work and they seem to work very, very well. This is probably a nice reflection of our only significant contribution to philosophy, that is pragmatism. But we are very, very committed to the present stakeholder model. We're committed to it because it works, because it has enabled the internet to proceed in an organic way, to evolve subject to opportunities presented by technological change, by new business models occurring to people in the commercial sphere, and to changes in consumer behavior, as well as the work of social entrepreneurs who find ways to make use of it in terms of spreading information, spreading cultural opportunities. We also believe in it because it does, in fact, facilitate the free flow of information and freedom of expression, and these are quite plainly fundamental values for us here in the United States. So I said, it has become quite a preoccupation these days for one reason that some of you, maybe many of you, would be familiar with, and that is in December we're going to go to the World Conference on International Telecommunications. This is a treaty conference, so a conference among nations in which the nations of the world will have an opportunity to consider and amend international telecommunications regulations that were last addressed in 1988. So fundamentally a different world from the one we know today. This conference has attracted a great deal of attention. It's now the subject of congressional resolutions, both the Senate and the House, that underscore our national commitment again to the internet governance arrangements as we find them today. But it also, notwithstanding what is a sort of surprisingly, maybe almost uniquely, united front here in the United States among all parties and interest, it is seen by many as an opportunity for the extension of intergovernmental controls over the internet. Now, I am of the school that this anxiety is probably somewhat misplaced, that the concern is probably rather overstated. But it nevertheless is a real concern, a real set of anxieties. It has, in our particular space, attracted a great deal of attention from government officials, from civil society, from others who are obviously very alert to the problems that intergovernmental controls would in fact create for the Internet and its continuing development. We have, in terms of our preparation, which have been ongoing now for nearly 2 years, we have, President Obama has appointed as the head of delegation, Terry Kramer, a man, again, known perhaps to some of you at this point, a man who had a very significant career in business in the mobile industry, both here in the United States, but also for many, many years abroad. Ambassador Kramer is leading what has now become a quite sizable U.S. delegation, probably at this point approaching 100 people, both government officials and private sector representatives who will serve as experts and as advisors. And we have begun to look at a series of particular issues that are of importance, that have come in as contributions from all over the world. Now, more of them are coming in, so there will be more to be considered, but the ones that have attracted the most attention at this point are contributions seeking to have regulations addressing cybersecurity or network security matters, mobile roaming matters, and a variety of things that, that address the issue of the architecture, either of underlying transmission systems or perhaps more broadly the architectures that we've come to identify with the Internet. In addition, there has been a what I think may be the a contribution that, that touches upon and resonates with what is perhaps the largest issue of the day. This came from the European Telecommunications Network Operators. It is a proposal that, depending upon how you read it, is designed to try to transfer monies from those who send information, those who send content, to the operators of transmission systems, or perhaps simply opening up a space for broader negotiations between and among the operators of transmission systems and those who have content to deliver or distribute. But the point touches upon something that is a very real issue. And I digress just long enough to say the Aetna proposal itself, in my view, borders on the risible. It is a set of propositions that could never, ever be affected in practice. But nevertheless, it addresses something that is real. And it is, I think, something we will see a good deal of in Baku, and we will certainly see a good deal of in Dubai at the WICCAT. And that is the concern in many parts of the world about enlarging and extending their broadband infrastructure. There are many places in the world where it is still unavailable. There are many places in the world where, given the projections for additional traffic, the broadband infrastructure is going to have to be expanded very, very significantly. And the question is, where do you get the revenue to do that? How do you pay for it? This is it's a real issue. There are, we think, real answers to the question, but none of them are easy. They have to do with respect for the rule of law, for privatization of state-owned enterprises in the space, for liberalization in the sense of permitting competition in the space. But also, it's quite clear, in many places there are going to be requirements for funding from, in the best case, multinational organizations like the World Bank or the Inter-American Development Bank, others of that nature. But these are serious, serious issues. And I think for those who are going to be in Baku, it's very, very likely that this will be one of the most important undercurrents, and maybe obvious currents as we go along. Let me mention just two other things in closing. One of the issues that is very important to the future of the IGF is the appointment of the United Nations officials who are going to help secure the continuation of it and help in the coordination of it. There are two positions. One is essentially the person who, on a full-time basis, would serve as the secretariat, as it were, for this operation, something that was done in the early years by a man named Marcus Kummer, a Swiss diplomat who served with great distinction. There's also a position for special advisor to the Secretary General. This is a very decidedly part-time position, but one that is regarded in the UN structure as a very important proposition. Both of these positions have been vacant now for a very long time, for a longer time, frankly, than one can easily excuse. I suspect you will hear a good deal of discussion in Baku about the necessity to fill these positions. And if anyone has an opportunity in Baku to speak to that, particularly to speak to UN officials about that, I urge you to do so. I mean, these are important positions. They ought to be filled. They need to be filled in terms of securing the long-term good health of the IGF. Last point. One of the great pleasures, one of the things that I'm going to have an opportunity to do in Baku is participate in the U.S.-Azerbaijan dialogue that addresses ICT matters. We are looking forward to a session on the Tuesday of the meetings, on November 6th, with the Minister of Communications, and an opportunity at that time, in addition to exchanging views about how we can assist one another with our insights and other means. We look forward to signing a memorandum of understanding between the two countries in terms of continuing to proceed along that path in the future. It's something that, as it turns out, in the world of bilateral affairs, took a very long time to get to the point where we could sign it, but the opportunity to sign it is something that I'm genuinely looking forward to. So I want to thank all of you again for coming here, for your interest in what is from every perspective, a very, very important subject.
Thank you, Phil. I'm going to go to our next speaker, and then we will find time for just one or two questions for each of our speakers. But let me now, it's my pleasure to also introduce all of you to Dr. Narziz Gurbanova, who is the... I'm actually going to let you tell you her title. She is the Deputy Chief of Mission and the Economic Counselor at the Embassy of Azerbaijan to U.S. So she is here in Washington, D.C., and we're very pleased to have her speak with us. I want to echo Ambassador Vivier's thanks to Azerbaijan, the host country. I'm very familiar with the cost of operating the IGF because my company is a small donor to the Donors Fund, as many of the companies are. The majority of the funding for the Secretariat comes from some very friendly European governments, but and some contribution from the technical community. But that's the Secretariat. There is a very significant cost that the host country bears each year that is what makes the IGF happen. And so this is really very much a partnership. And I welcome you to this first opportunity, but I hope not the last, for you to address us.
Thank you very much, Marilyn, and I appreciate this opportunity to be here, and I feel specifically privileged of sharing this panel together with Ambassador Vivier. Before picking up the topic of IGF, I would just like to give you a very brief overview of what Azerbaijan is, where Azerbaijan is, and what do we see our future road going in terms of ICT development. Well, Azerbaijan is the biggest country in the South Caucasus and the biggest U.S. partner in the South Caucasus. We are ranked as the middle-income country with an idea to propel ourselves up to the ranks of higher income countries, with our last year's GDP totaling $63 billion. ICT, in fact, ranks the second after the oil and gas sector in Azerbaijan and is truly regarded as a strategic one. The share of ICT in our GDP last year was 10%, and the cumulative investments in the sector for the last 10 years have been $3 billion. Only last year we invested $500 million. And the 80% of the sector is in private ownership. So this also adds up more predictability and creates favorable environment for predictable investments and then creating the legal framework for developing this sector. Azerbaijan is I would say, at the forefront within the region of the former Soviet Union countries of developing its ICT sector, as I said, and our country's strategy is enshrined in our Azerbaijan 2020 Way Forward strategy, where ICT has a particular place. And we have engaged together with partners, as well as the United States and regional partners, in many initiatives in the region. The first initiative being the U.S. Pioneered Open Government Partnership. We are an active contributor to this endeavor. Also, together again with the United States, we're planning to launch our first ever telecommunication satellite early next year. And that satellite will provide an opportunity for not only Azerbaijan, because we will be using basically 25% of the capacity, but we will have an opportunity to lease the rest of the capacity of satellite to the neighboring countries. So, and then other countries in the region, and the satellite will have a broadcast footprint even in the Middle East, in the Caspian region, some parts of Europe, Central Asia. An important endeavor that, again, we are pursuing together with U.S. support is TASIM. I would say a game-changing project, and it's called sometimes virtual and electronic Silk Road. And that is building the fiber optic backbone, connecting countries of the region, stretching from China to Germany. And it will be serving 20 countries, and we're talking about constructing of 9,000 kilometers of fiber optic. So that will increase to a very considerable degree the level of connectivity and the prices, I would say, and competitiveness of local economies. And we also envisage to include actively in that process Afghanistan and other countries of Central Asia. Two additional projects that are of interest specifically related to Azerbaijan's own domestic development agenda is the e-government project. So far we have managed to incorporate in the e-government system 60 government agencies in Azerbaijan, and we have an opportunity to render 120 e-services to our citizens. Not only citizens, but people who would need specific documentation that are issued by various state agencies. And another cherished idea of ours would be to create at some point a regional innovation center in Baku, near Baku, where we could envisage a close collaboration between, say, university to industry relationship, where we could help startups develop and then turn into profitable business. And we plan to institutionalize the fund, special IT support fund, within the Ministry of Information Communication Technologies that would help these startups and create favorable conditions, be it in customs, be it in taxation, so that they can be profitable. And these project is right now in the making, so I'll be able to share more at a later stage, but we will be actively seeking also a support of U.S. companies, innovators, for that project to become reality. Specifically, as far as the IGF itself is concerned, as has been voiced and said by my colleagues in Azerbaijan several times, we really feel particularly honored to be able to contribute to global efforts that would help bring the digital divide, increase connectivity in the region, and ultimately make all our economies interconnected, integrated. Another important reason for us is that the IGF would bring together all various types of stakeholders and stakeholder groups together. And what's specifically fascinating about that is that this event is, as Ambassador Fevere said, is a highly decentralized event. With lots of panels, lots of workshops going on there. And I've just identified a couple of workshop titles that are of particular interest to me, specifically security, openness, and privacy. How could you really balance these three important things? Building capacity in internet governance, and definitely education, distance learning, different opportunities, and making education I would say, compatible with the present-day realities and demands. Also, IGF, we think, is an excellent opportunity for Azerbaijan as well as other countries in the region to showcase their best examples as well as their success in developing their ICT sector, as well as to look for partnership with the international community. And definitely with the U.S. companies that are present in the region or intend to be playing an active role there. The IGF event this year is tied up closely with another important event that is conducted on an annual basis in Azerbaijan. That's Baku Tel, the biggest IT fair trade show in the Caspian and in the Caucasus. Normally, the number of people who attend this event range between 13 to 14,000. And we have 15 to 20 companies, IT innovation companies from around 35, 40 countries all over the world. So it's also another opportunity for U.S. companies to be there, to make the business contacts. As the ambassador said, on the margins of the IGF forum, there will be a special side event that will be arranged together with American Chamber of Commerce in Baku and our Ministry of Information and Communication Technologies to showcase the best of the U.S.-Azerbaijan cooperation in the ICT and then look for additional opportunities, and there are many, how to boost this partnership further. As far as the IGF itself is concerned, I guess Marilyn would provide more detailed information about that. Let me just say that we expect around 1,500 participants from nearly 100 countries in the world. That's normal practice, as we've been told. So we're expecting this number of people, and therefore we're making all our efforts to be able to provide the right information and time, and then to be a helpful host country for arranging this event. There are some particular details probably you would be interested in asking in terms of visa issues, etc., so I'll be ready to answer those. Let me just say that the first step would be definitely to register for the event, and then as far as specific visa issues are concerned, yes, there are two options. You can either receive your visa here at the embassy or at the airport, because that's a particularly specified event where normally we do not issue visas at the airport, because we have embassies in most countries. But this is a particular case. So you can have your visa issued at the airport, but for that you really have to register first at the website, and then you will receive a confirmation. And after that, you will have also registration confirmation, and then they will issue an additional invitation letter for you, which you can present before you board an airplane, so that air carriers do not keep asking you questions. You don't have visa, so how can you enter the country? And another particular issue specifically with regard to the visa fee itself. Normally, it's something that is done on the basis of reciprocity. So we as Azerbaijani citizens, when we travel to the United States, the visa fee for us is $160. So that is the same with Azerbaijan. But the distinction is that when you get your visas at the airport, basically the organizers will pay for you, but if you happen to have had your visa applications already done through the embassy and you had to pay this amount, you will again be reimbursed in Baku. But for that, you really have to inform the organizers well beforehand so that all the preparations are done on the spot. Well, last but not least, we've been chatting together with Ambassador Fervier, and I say that October and November is a wonderful time to visit Baku. And once you happen to be there, please do not miss sturgeon kebab served with pomegranate sauce. I really highly recommend it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Narcisse. A wealth of information, but I would like to offer an opportunity for just one or two questions for each of our speakers before we go into our round table, and it is going to be a round of updates. Mm-hmm. Do I have a brave soul? I see a brave soul. Courtney, yes?
Thanks. Courtney Roush from Freedom House. Right. Just since we have you here on logistical questions.
Courtney, sorry.
Courtney Roush from Freedom House. Since we have a representative here for logistical questions, I would just note on the visa, the e-visa application form, it's confusing. And some of the questions that are being asked, it's not clear whose contact information you want or what should be put in for the IGF. So clarifying that would be helpful. And then just one comment on the ambassador's comments about the U.S. delegation and who's going. You know, it's great to hear the government and the private sector, but also don't forget civil society. There's actually a lot of civil society going, and I think that that's one of the biggest strengths of the IGF is the multi-stakeholderism that really includes civil society as a key participant. And we're delighted that we are going to have a U.S. representative on our panel. So thank you.
On that particular question, let me direct you to Sabina, a colleague of ours from the embassy. She has been our consul for 2 years, and now she's supporting me and helping me out with the economic issues. But I guess Sabina can help you on that.
And maybe I'll follow up with you as well. We could actually put something out more broadly, because I think there will be a lot of questions. Any last question or comment before we move on? I see none. So I think Ambassador Vere is going to have to step out now, Phil. We'll be leaving us. But we want to thank him again and thank Narcisse for joining us and speaking, and then we'll start the rest of our program. I always appreciate the fact that Phil thanks me, but it's important for me to engage in full disclosure, and that is the role of Chief Catalyst just mostly means that I know a lot of people, that's you, who actually do the real work. And that is one of the things about the IGF USA. And I mentioned earlier that our steering group is open. And when people ask to be added to the steering group list, we add them. Now, of course, not all 76 people on the list do equal work, but a lot of them do a lot of work. And one of the interesting things, we held the IGF USA in July the 26th at Georgetown Law Center. It's grown in attendance at each of the meetings. And this last time, it was really interesting. We had close to 300 people, and almost 50% of them came to their first IGF USA. So that was a real interesting opportunity, I think, for us to begin to reach more people. And in some cases, that's because some of the folks who've been working all along, maybe one person, now has added a colleague or two colleagues. And I think that that's really important for us to look at and say, so I am fond of saying that lots of government, but not just government, say, if the internet is so important, why isn't the UN in charge? So one of the things to remember about the IGF itself is that it is actually created by language that came from a UN conference called the World Summit on the Information Society. And, you know, I'm just showing off my well-eared publication of the Tunis Agenda and the outcomes document, because this document is negotiated text. And among the text there is a call for us all to act on an equal footing. So I will say, and you're going to hear this, this is startling to many government people who come to their first meeting. But it's also startling to business guys. I think it may be actually a little more comfortable to some of the NGOs and civil society. But people walk in, and particularly for governments, they're looking for that tent card that says name of country. So for those of you who are coming, if this is your first time, you will feel like you are in a football field filled with people, and they don't have unique identifiers on. That's the good news about where you're coming. But could I just right now ask for a show of hands of those who will be coming to the IGF in Azerbaijan? So one of the things I hope you'll take from this, if you're new to the IGF, is that these are friendly faces coming from the IGF USA, but we don't spend our time talking to ourselves once we're there. And that's what we're going to hear about. I have a very long list of people who are going to tell you what they are doing, but let me try to put it into a little context. We have something, so there are 4 days to the IGF, plus day zero, and we actually call it day zero. And day zero is a day for pre-events. There are a number scheduled, and for any of you who are your first-timers, if you want to give me your business card, I'll send you the version of the agenda that prints out nicely so that everything is on one page, because the version you print out from the website doesn't quite do that. But the pre-events are self-organized. In order to get a room for a pre-event, you have to have an open meeting. So that is something for you to be aware of. If you're coming and you haven't fully booked yourself on day zero, you should be looking at these pre-events and thinking about whether they're of particular interest to you. There's some very exciting ones. There's also something this time called side events. And so this is all code. I'm going to try to decode it a little bit. Side events are not, they are scheduled as a room is available. And they may or may not be an open event because they may be in very small rooms. I'll talk about what some of the side events are. There are also something called open forums. And the entities that can register for an open forum are the IGOs and the international organizations. Their sessions are also different from the workshops and the plenaries in that they can talk just about themselves, because the open forum is an opportunity for people to learn about what that IGO or international organization is doing. So the reason I make that distinction is we have guidelines for workshops and for plenary sessions, and that is that we must be multi-stakeholder in the organizing and in the participation. So you will see very perhaps different points of view in many of these workshops, but the other thing, and in the plenary sessions, but the other thing you should be aware of is many of these topics are maturing. They have been addressed over a number of years, and so many of them are not 101 on a topic. So when you look at the workshops and decide what you're interested in, you'll see a range of sort of fundamentally informational workshops and some that are pretty well developed. And I just want to make that point for you when you go in and look on the website, look at the list of workshops, click on it. There's an extensive description of the workshop and the list of speakers. So let me start with people telling you about what they're going to do. And I think what I'm going to do, because we need the microphone. Okay. Let me start with Jonathan Zuck, who is right here, sort of in the back of the room and close to the microphone. And I've told people they can only talk for 3 to 4 minutes, so you may only get half their story.
It's unusual for a Z to go first, so thank you, Marilyn. You've changed a lot of high school history, so maybe I will spend a little less time actually talking to myself in Azerbaijan than I would have otherwise. I've been invited to speak in a couple of different workshops on transparency and we'll be doing that, but sometimes it's interesting. I find my role running a trade association that represents small and medium-sized businesses that's become kind of the de facto voice of mobile application developers, and that's become a really big issue for small businesses and privacy legislation, location data, et cetera. There's a lot of issues surrounding privacy and around IP. So sometimes I feel like my role in these things is like a senator, where I'm trying to think big and what would be good for the institution, and other times I'm really just representing a constituency, like somebody from the House of Representatives. And I think in this particular trip to the IGF, I will be really trying to actively engage in those discussions on behalf of my constituents, which are these small and medium-sized application developers around the world on issues surrounding privacy, intellectual property, and other things related to the mobile application development space.
And I'm just going to give Jonathan a shout-out, because last year he actually brought some of these entrepreneurs, and maybe you would say one more word about, maybe two more words about bringing them and their experience.
Well, definitely. Last year we had a kind of fellowship program and brought some entrepreneurs from around the world to participate in the IGF, and the centerpiece of that trip was a workshop that was sort of on creating an environment conducive to entrepreneurship. Because we really do believe that there are internet governance components to development, but a lot of that development is a function of creating an entrepreneur-friendly environment. Most economic growth, or in our case, economic recovery, comes from small businesses, not from big ones. And so making that environment conducive to small business success, I think, is almost always one of the critical factors in any economic discussion, whether broadly or in the context of internet governance.
Thanks. I'm going to go to Pam Covington, who's going to talk about a particular workshop, and then I think I'll go to Courtney, if that's okay.
Thank you, Marilyn. I'm pleased to be the representative of workshop number 62, which is Digital Citizenship: Can It Translate in the Face of Language, Cultural, and Economic Differences? This is the third of a series of workshops based on digital citizenship that was started in Vilnius in 2010. We went to Nairobi in 2011, and now we will be in Baku. Basically, a brief overview: in the United States and many other countries, digital citizenship was introduced in the context of child online safety, internet safety for children. What we are trying to do in our workshop is to broaden that vision, including elderly and youths in social media. So we have, thanks to Marilyn, she just told me today that she has recruited two youths who are experts in social media, one from the MENA region and one from Iraq, which they will contribute to our panel, which includes four or five youths from Georgia, two Azeri youths who specialize in digital media and digital tools. And then we also have an Asian youth representative and possibly some Nordic and UK. So we will have a well-rounded regional workshop. We will also have a few adults monitoring their behavior. Anyway, we hope that you will either participate remotely and tune in to workshop number 62. It falls under the security, privacy, and openness category. And it ties also into what the Internet Governance Forum is all about, which is the multi-stakeholder model of representing all stakeholders.
Thanks, Pam.
Sort of dormitory or frat house.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to volunteer to.
Okay. Yeah. As long as you bring the boom box, we'll be ready for you. Thank you.
Courtney.
Again, my name is Courtney Raj. I'm with Freedom House, and Freedom House will be hosting two workshops this year. And this is our first time actually hosting the workshops or organizing them ourselves. We have participated, I believe, in pretty much every IGF in recent history, talking about digital censorship, about online freedom. I think most of you hopefully know our annual survey of internet freedom, freedom on the net. We just put it out last week. It launched at Google. It covers 39 countries this year. So we'll have a panel discussing the findings from that survey and what some of the global trends are, as well as having some participants, again, representing civil society, business, and government, talking about their specific context as well as the broader trends. We'll have a second workshop that will focus on, look at the title, this is the one I'm moderating, on regional and country-level internet governance forums, what's at stake and who's involved. And what I'm hoping to get out of this is less of a panel discussion and more of a real workshop so that people can think about what are these regional and national-level fora, actually, how are they contributing to the debate? What are they getting out of that? How the Arab region, for example, just held their first regional IGF. Other regions have held more often. And so what we'll seek to understand from the multi-stakeholders there, which include, again, we have a government representative, we have somebody from Google, we have somebody from iHub in Kenya, and a couple of other participants, is how these sub-IGF processes, United Nations processes, are feeding in, how can they be more effective, and even what is effectiveness. So if you're interested in that, we hope that you'll come, and I'm aiming to make it very interactive. So also any suggestions are welcome.
So let me provide a little broader perspective for everyone, and then go to you, to Donald, about national and regional IGF initiatives. There's no such thing as a national or regional IGF. And they are not associated with the UN. Some of them are struggling with that. Some of them think because they are organized or blessed by the government that somehow gives them special standing. So let me mention that I am. There is also, and Courtney, if you haven't noticed this, you'll want to. On day two, there are two 90-minute events back-to-back where the national and regional IGFs will be reporting out. That is, what they're doing, how they're doing it, and it's very much, we do have a network of the coordinators, and we have begun to put together a sort of a very, very high-level commitment. For instance, not all of the national and regional initiatives have contact people. Not all of them have working email addresses. But they're very exciting. They are very organic, and they're very different. And I don't know if Dima Epstein is on the phone from Cornell, but he and I are actually working on a study of the national and regional IGF initiatives. Last year, there were 17 entities, activities that called themselves regional IGFs. I wouldn't have said they were all regional, but some of them were sub-regional, but there were 22 national IGFs initiatives. So very exciting, and I'm looking forward to your workshop. And I think all of you may also be particularly interested, because one of the points that Courtney just made, the national and regional IGF initiatives are actually how people catch the virus we have at the IGF and take it home and start working on national policies or on social and economic issues that they learn about. And the networking that is growing up from person to person, I think, is very, very exciting.
I'll be very short. My name is Danilo Bakovic. I work with Courtney Freedom House. And beside the workshop panels that we will have and we'll host, in the pre-event, we will organize what we call an IGF incubator project selection. It's going to be from July until September. Actually, 2 weeks ago, we had an open competition for the civil society organizations to submit their innovative projects and ideas in this wide, you know, span of the activities. It can be from the research, it can be from the advocacy side, it can be from the capacity building training. But, you know, projects that were looking to promote and tackle, you know, internet freedom overall. I mean, in some places there is some negative trends, and in some places it's positive trends. So it was a very wide open call. And we got 28 applications, and that was in the first round. And then 10 applications made to the second round. And after the second round, which was a commission made from the Internet Freedom team members at Freedom House, we selected 6 ones that will participate. And we will be part of the delegation that Freedom House will bring, a civil society delegation that Freedom House will build. And in the public open event in front of the multi-stakeholder panel that will review their process, they will have a chance to present their ideas. And we will probably select 3 projects that will get the support to up to $15,000. They all have budgets, so if they win the nomination, they will get the amounts that they. But the cap was $15,000, so they can go back home and actually work and implement some of the great ideas and some exchanges that they will actually have in IGF Baku. So,
fantastic. Caleb, I need to move quickly here, so let's go to Dan O'Neill, and then if I can come to Paul after Dan, and then I'm going to go to Robert. Is that okay? And then I'm going to look for the rest of you.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. My name is Dan O'Neill, and I'm the Executive Director of the Global Information Infrastructure Commission, the GIIC, which has had the honor of actually hosting workshops at each and every one of the 5 IGF meetings we've had thus far. And we, again, this year, will host a workshop. This year, it is called Internet Governance in the Sustainable World. It is picking up on some of the themes that we had in our workshop last year in Nairobi, which was more of a focus on the work and challenges in developing countries. Last year, we were looking at some of the challenges having to do with cloud computing, and this year, we're going to pick up on some of those issues, but also kind of broader, picking up on the theme of Baku on sustainability. So we're looking at how internet governance is going to impact ICT and sustainable economic growth. We're looking at ICT and effective public services, ICT and innovation, the role that internet governance is going to play in this, and the interesting element that we want to bring is our workshop, the panelists, the majority of which are all coming from the developing world. We've got people coming from Nigeria. We've got people coming from Kenya. We've got people coming from Botswana. We've got people coming from Jordan to really kind of bring their experience and their expertise and their real life experience to some of these challenges and models that they have found for success. So again, we're looking for kind of that broad-based, that multi-stakeholder approach that has made the IGF so successful and building off that. So this is an open invitation to each and every one of you. It's workshop 186. I will have signs and directions for everybody in Baku so that they can attend.
And which day?
It is on the second day.
Day two.
Yes.
Okay, Paul, Robert, and then I'm going to come to Rashmi. Can I come to you then after? Okay.
I'm Paul Brigner. I'm the Regional Bureau Director for the Internet Society, Regional Bureau Director for North America. And the Internet Society has a variety of workshops that we're participating in and organizing. We actually have a conference call scheduled for the 9th at 11 a.m., where we're going to just give an overview of all of our activities for Internet Society members. So I think rather than me try to give an overview, which it would be too much to cover, so I think I should just make sure that Marilyn has that information and possibly could send it out
to
this group, because it would be great if you could join. We would love to see you there. Well, thank you.
So rumor has it that you have a briefing on day zero.
We do. We do have a briefing on day zero. It is about enhanced cooperation, and I think it hopefully will be a very helpful event in mapping out what is being done with regards to enhanced cooperation in the internet governance arena, and that possibly could lead flow into some of the other discussions that are happening at the United Nations and ITU. So we're hopeful that that's going to be a very good event.
And if you hand the microphone to Robert.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Robert Guerra. I'm a special advisor at the Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto. Before getting into some of the panels that I'm going to be involved in, I also wanted to talk about another activity that also takes place on day zero, and that's the GigaNet. And the GigaNet is the academic community for all the IGFs has an open call for papers, it's an academic meeting that takes place on day zero for academics to present work that's taking place over the last year and to have a discussion on some of the issues and items of research. I don't know what the program is right now, but if you look up GigaNet, IGF, the past sessions, they are also streamed and archived online, and so research papers and materials are there. I'm involved in four different sessions that are going to be taking place at the IGF with a variety of different multi-stakeholder partners. On day two, I'm going to be involved in a panel being organized by the Council of Europe and the Internet Services Providers Association on the free cross-border flow of internet traffic. We're going to be talking about issues of both privacy, legislative developments in Europe, and also some of the issues related to surveillance as data crosses countries and what are some of the issues, but also some of the emerging issues that are emerging in regards to that. Also on that day, I will be the sole, I guess, North American on a European panel on civil rights in the digital age about the impact the internet has on civil rights, and that will have representatives from the Dutch government, the European Parliament, and internet provider from Europe as well. Then the two other panels on, I guess, day three. One will be on cybersecurity that achieves privacy and civil liberties.
Robert, hold on just a minute. For those of you on the phone, I know you may want to take notes, but do you mind muting your phone? We're listening to the typing.
Thanks, Robert.
Great. So please mute if you're on the phone. And so then there are two kind of what I would say cybersecurity-related sessions on day three that I'm involved in, one with AT&T and others, Packet Clearinghouse on cybersecurity that achieves privacy and civil liberties, and then together with other colleagues at the ICANN's Stability and Security Advisory Committee, We have a session on internet filtering and blocking of the DNS content. And this is particularly of interest to us to share kind of the technical perspective, particularly given a lot of initiatives both in the U.S. and abroad that have not seen the light of day or have, but what are the issues on the internet and what does the technical community and others have to say. So I'm happy to share these with others. And as a longtime kind of veteran of the IGF process, I would suggest kind of two things for those trying to evaluate what sessions to go to. First, find a buddy who's been to these before. With over 120 or 140 plus sessions, it can be very daunting. And so pick a track, a couple of issues, and to try to find colleagues that can follow the sessions that no doubt will take place during the exact same time you're in another session and try to report back. And I would say that the business group gets together every morning to share some perspectives, and other stakeholders do as well. So really checking in either at the beginning or the end of the day, because the program does get tweaked at the last minute sometimes. Really look forward to see a very coordinated and, I guess, much more strategic way to go to the IGF, which will be much needed. So thank you.
Thanks, Robert. Rashmi?
Hi, thank you. And I'm Rashmi Ranganath from Public Knowledge. I actually asked for the floor to speak on behalf of Jean Kimmelman from Global Partners.
Oh, good, thanks.
Yeah, they are organizing a panel on multi-stakeholderism, and Jean requested that I announce that. So I guess the panel is going to, the take of the panel is that multi-stakeholderism is not completely free from controversy, and so the panel is going to discuss questions of representation, participation, accountability, responsibility, and transparency, and efficiency in multi-stakeholder processes. They're going to talk about who gets to participate and who is perhaps underrepresented in multi-stakeholder processes, as well as the legitimacy of the stakeholders who participate and their ability to influence outcomes. Just want to say that. Thank you.
Thanks, and I just want to extend a little bit of what a key point you just made. But again, I'm going to ask those on the conference bridge to please mute. We're helping you move your paper on your desk as well. But multi-stakeholder processes are not all the same, and that's one of the important things I think that you see when you go to the IGF, where all parties act on an equal footing. Some other multi-stakeholder processes have different models, and I'm not proposing that everything should be exactly the same, but I think a discussion about who can participate and how participation happens and enabling broader participation is very much on the topic, and a topic that we talk a lot about at the IGF. Not just how to participate, how to broaden and deepen the IGF's model of multi-stakeholder participation, but also how that reflects into some of the others. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for mentioning it. Sure. Okay, I'm going to move here. I think, Garland, can we hand you the microphone? It's right behind you. Rashmi? Yes. And then I'll go to Chris. And I'm going to come, if I could, to you. Okay. It should be on.
All right. Okay. So I'm doing two workshops at the IGF in partnership with Diplo Foundation, which is a great group to work with. And Marilyn to thank for hooking me up with them. And this will, I think I've done every one but the first one in terms of participating and pulling together workshops for the IGF. So I'm quite committed to the process. This time around, I'm looking to do one on local content production and dissemination as a driver of access. And what I'm trying to do there is cite some examples. Ambassador Phil Vivier will be setting the stage for us on this workshop, and then we'll get right into it with folks that are experienced working with the Indigenous Australians in sort of helping them become citizen reporters using iPhones and other technologies, and actually having quite a number of them as paid reporters. We have a representative from Skype talking about content production. I've got Kristen Peterson with Invineo that does a tremendous amount in developing countries, sort of boots on the ground, connecting the schools. One of the programs she's going to talk about is connecting the schools and community centers in Uganda. I've got Bevel Wooding talking about what he's been doing in build-outs there in the Caribbean. So we're just going to have some real examples with a number of people coming in and talking about, and also government officials talking about the creation of local content. And then on the second one, what we're going to do is look at localization of data. There's a big push on now by countries in Europe and elsewhere to look at local data build out in their countries. And so we're going to sort of discuss aspects of that. And again, I've got some top people at Pepper at Cisco, some top people at AT&T India, some government officials, Google officials, et cetera, to sort of talk about, some aspects of, I've got the OECD economist, Sam Paltridge coming in, talk about the economics aspects, but, what's involved in developing hubs where big data lives? What are some of the challenges? How does that affect the local economy? So hopefully we'll have some fun with both of those.
Right, thanks, Garland. And hand off to Chris.
Thank you, Marilyn. My name is Chris Wilson. I'm with Tech America. And Tech America, and frankly, its legacy associations, including ITAA, have been active participants with IGF for years. Most notably through my former colleague, and predecessor, Liesl Franz, who's now lending her talents to the State Department. But I am so in some respects, I'm here as a proxy for Liesl because she before she left to go to the State Department this summer, has put together two workshops. For IGF, both dealing with cybersecurity issues, which were right in her bailiwick. And so we will continue to support those going forward. The first is number 161. This is taking more of a practical look at cybersecurity, entitled Operationalization of Cybersecurity Nationally and Transnationally. So, it's sort of a practical approach, looking at what works, what doesn't work from a variety of participants, including companies, infrastructure providers, governments, and other participants, with I think the ultimate goal of stimulating further discussion about collaboration and public-private partnerships on cybersecurity. That is day one. That's number 161. And then the second workshop is number 173. This is on day three. I'd say perhaps complementing the first workshop, this is looking more from a public policy perspective at cybersecurity through the lens of privacy and civil liberties. And the discussion sort of will look at national data access policies and cross-border flow of personally identifiable information, the implications of virtualization and cloud computing, threats and risks to the core internet and domain name infrastructure, inter-jurisdictional harmonization, and how the Budapest Convention on Cybercrime interacts with the techniques of contemporary cyber criminals. So I think taken together, they complement each other quite well. And again, that is number 173, and that's on day three.
Okay. Terrific. I'm going to, Megan, can I come to you? And then I'm going to go to Steve Crocker.
Thank you, Marilyn. My name's Megan McMillan, and I work for the Commercial Law Development Program, which is a subset of the Office of the General Counsel of the U.S. Department of Commerce. And we're excited this year to be facilitating the participation of 12 Iraqi participants, 10 from the government, 5 from the regulator, 5 from the ministry, and 2 civil society participants, we hope.
Fantastic. And let me come in over here to Steve Crocker. And then I'm going to make another sweep. So if you haven't spoken yet, you're probably going to.
So thank you, Marilyn. So I'm Steve Crocker, and as was pointed out, I'm saddled with being chair of the board of directors of ICANN, along with my colleague here, Judith Vasquez, on the board. The first thing I want to get out of going to the IGF is to learn to count, because I think in terms of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I don't know which ones are day 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Monday is zero.
Monday is zero. So I can take it from there. Okay, so that's good. ICANN is, has always participated very heavily in IGFs, and we have a pretty sizable contingent who will be there this time. We've been involved in the process. We contribute to the donors fund. We are having an open forum, an ICANN open forum, on Thursday afternoon. That's day one, two, three, day three, right?
Yes.
Okay. hope to see as many of you in person as you can come. There's a whole range of issues, of course. Our mandate is on the boring end of things, just keeping the identifier straight and sort of lightweight oversight of expansion of the domain name system and so forth. So that's kind of the boring stuff, and we'll just be in the background, and nobody cares very much about what we do. Absolutely. Who's next?
I'm going to hand off, if I might. Erin, did you want to make any comments, or Andy? Okay. Then who have I missed? Who is coming, or is part of a larger group that is coming? Steve, there you are. Hand to Steve, and then I'm going to say a couple of other things.
Thanks. I'm Steve DelBianco with NetChoice and have been to all six IGFs and also with the steering group at IGF USA, so I have the chemical burns and calluses of being catalyzed by Marilyn many times over the last several years. Marilyn teed this up by saying that IGF asks the question, who should govern the internet? But from my experience, it's a completely different question we ask at IGF. At IGF, we ask that when people use the internet, how should their activities effectively be governed? Because it's really the activities of people that you govern. You don't govern the internet per se. For instance, when people go online, they express themselves, they enroll others, they share data and information, they buy and sell things, and then unfortunately some people will conduct fraud and crime and harassment, also using the internet. So of all these activities, they've been around for centuries or as long as people have, so they've been around long before the internet. So why do we need an IGF to talk about them? And keep in mind the governments and citizens, civil society, they have always been concerned with these activities. So what's different is three dimensions. The internet changes everything with respect to time, distance, and identity. Time, distance, and identity were completely different online than they do in the physical world. And that just amplifies the activities of people online, and it really invigorates the conversations that happen in IGF to such an extent that it motivates and drives the search for solutions. So you see a quest to solve human activity problems that have been around for millennia and to solve them right away. And that's the whole impetus of what you find at the IGF. We find it at ICANN all the time as well. So that's the importance that drives me to participate at the IGF, to try to get my member companies to attend, and if not attend, at least to pay attention to what the IGF is all about. I look forward to seeing all of you in Baku.
Thanks, Steve. So I want to give a couple of other very short reports, and I can only report for those who contacted me. So please don't think that I'm purposely overlooked someone. But I did speak with Microsoft, and they will be sending 11 people, about 50% from non-U.S. and about 50% from the U.S. They're doing actively engaged in a number of workshops. I spoke also with Google. Sarah sends her regrets to all of you. Sarah Favley was not able to join us today. They are bringing also a group of about, I think it's about 12 or 13, 14 people. And their group will also be at least 50% from non-U.S. They're doing, they're heavily involved. And it was a delightful conversation because it allows me to just categorize how people see the IGF. But before I go back to this phrase, AT&T is bringing four people, and two of them are non-U.S. Verizon is bringing four, and a couple of them are non-U.S. And I think that's a really important point, that the companies are reaching out to their presence in other countries and trying to make sure that they are bringing representatives. WITSA, the World IT Services Alliance that is partnering with GIIC, DC on the workshop that they're organizing. We'll have the a representative from the Computer Society of Kenya, and they will have the head of the region from the MENA region, Nizar Zaka, and I'm going to, they will also have a couple of people there from Nigeria and someone from the UK, as well as one person from the US. So from the business side, I don't know enough about civil society. I'm going to make a request to all of you to help us learn more about that. But we are seeing a real diversification, which I think is one of the things that is really good. Disney's bringing two people. I keep going down my list here. Now, I just want to say something for all of you. If you're coming to a workshop and you're looking at a workshop and you're saying, how can I tell what's going to go on in this workshop? So you can download the description. But the other thing you can do is go back to last year's workshops. And they were all transcribed. So you can see the report. Everyone who organizes a workshop is required to write a report and to submit it, or they don't get a workshop slot again the next year. So if you're, you know, if you're trying to catch up on a topic and it's new to you, that's a great opportunity to be able to go back and to see that. There will be a number of social events as well, and I right now can't tell you what all of them are, but I do need to ask a big favor from you. It's my pleasure to be the person who gets to try to find out who all of the U.S. attendees are, so that I can give the contact information to the ambassador's team so that he can send invitations. And for the past 3 years, the U.S. ambassador in each of the countries has hosted a reception for the U.S. attendees. So if you're coming, if you could let me know who your contact interface is, then I will make sure you're on the list. It is focused on the U.S. attendees, so this is an effort to bring the U.S. civil society, technical community, et cetera, all together. The host event, I am told, is on Thursday night. But please treat that as advisory until you see it on the website, because they have been going back and forth about which night to hold it. And the latest information I have is that is day three. What else? I want to go back to the agenda, but let me take any questions before I go back to the agenda. There's a couple of other things I want. Yes, Irene, and then Andy.
Thank you. I just wanted to add to your announcement about participation by U.S. companies. I just wanted to say, so my name is Irene Burisova. I'm with VeriSign. And just wanted to say that our plans regarding participation at the IGF in Baku were finalized earlier today, as a matter of fact. And three people from VeriSign will be participating in the IGF in Baku. One of them is on the multi-stakeholder advisory group. And so I wanted to repeat once again that VeriSign considers the IGF absolutely indispensable for the success of the multi-stakeholder internet governance model. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. And before I go to Andy, I'm just going to explain for anyone who's new. So there is something called a multi-stakeholder advisory group, and it is composed of individuals from business, technical community, civil society, NGOs, governments. The IGOs, the intergovernmental organizations, do have observer status, and these individuals are appointed by the Secretary General of the UN, and they serve in their individual capacity. And their job is to advise the Secretary General on the planning of the event. So it is actually a very important function, and Azerbaijan has a very active member on the IGF that's been on the IGF now for a number of years. So I just wanted to mention that. Andy, you had, did you? Yes.
The comment is, I've been to, my name is Andrew Mack at AM Global Consulting here in Washington, and I've been to, I think, five of the first six, something like that. They're really pretty extraordinary events, and so anybody who can go, it's unclear right now whether I'm going to be able to or not, but for anybody who can go, it's definitely something to see. It's one of the rare opportunities for the private sector and the nonprofit CSO world to really interact on issues that they might not otherwise interact on. And one of the things that I found really very powerful was to sit down and to listen to a lot of representatives from large private sector companies sitting down and talking about issues, whether it's language preservation or, you know, how children use the web or whatever it is. I think it's a very powerful opportunity not to be missed. Go outside your sector would be one of my big pieces of advice. The second thing is that we find oftentimes that within the United States delegation and within the OECD delegations generally, there's a lot more agreement between the different sectors. And we have the opportunity, I think, to show a real model to a lot of other countries where that's not so much the case. So my two questions are, number one is the panel that Jonathan put together last year about work with the small businesses was pretty unique and very, very, very well received. And I think it's the kind of thing that I was hoping that there'd be more of. I don't know if you, as chief catalyst and the person who's probably looked at the agenda more than anybody else knows, if there is anything like that going on. And the second thing is, if it's not possible for me to go, and there are maybe others for whom this is the case, what kind of remote participation opportunities might there be? The timing just may not work out for me. So,
reading ahead, Andy took us to the next agenda item, which is a discussion about a remote hub. And let me explain what remote hubs are for those of you who haven't gone. The remote hub concept is that you sign up to be a remote hub and host it. You go through training and you pick the event that you are going to participate in for the people at your location. So we use WebEx and other tools in order to provide really the fact that you are participating remotely. There is an assigned remote moderator in each of the workshops and in the plenary sessions. And so if you're a remote hub, you are online with that moderator so you can raise your hand and submit a question. And many of the national and regional IGFs, particularly the national IGFs, do organize remote hubs. We were fortunate last year. We did have a remote hub that was organized by American University. Derek was here earlier but has had to step out. Let me explain the time difference and ask for anyone who's interested. Now, you don't have to all be in one place. And because of the time difference, we're talking 7 hours. When you look at the agenda, you're probably going to be wanting to look at the afternoon in Baku. So hypothetically,
9 hours.
9 hours.
So when it's like 6 p.m. in Baku, it's 9 a.m. the same day here in Washington, D.C. It's 9 hours.
9 hours, okay. I can't tell time. Thank gosh you're here. I am talking to a company, and I'm looking for others who may be interested. This is going to mean probably opening your office very early and trying to provide continental breakfast. And I'm sure we can find people to help with that. But it also means that you have to be the remote organizer. You have to agree for the little bit of online training, and you will have to maintain a relationship with the remote moderator there in the room. So if you can pick a workshop and participate remotely, or you can pick a plenary session. And I am looking for people who are interested in thinking about doing that. It's 4 days, so you may not, you know, someone might not want to host every day, but we will try to make it simple and try to organize some interest in that. So if you're interested and you could see me later, I'm going to put you all in a room and let you decide. Because I can't really coordinate what you do, but I can help make sure that you have the information and know how to interact. And there will be a number of people who don't travel. So, you know, I think that may be a good opportunity. There are 14 people right now from the United States government that are going, and that number may increase slightly. And that is fantastic news. That may be the largest single government attendance except for Azerbaijan.
Are they separate departments and agencies? Can you tell us who these
I can tell you some of them because I've been talking to them and I've been doing briefings on it. So I'll drop some names that I know, but I don't know everyone. And Megan may also know some additional names. Larry Strickling is going from NTIA, Fiona Alexander from NTIA, Chris Himmerlane from NTIA, from the Department of Commerce, Ambassador Vivier, Manu Bardois. I'm still trying to get confirmation that Andy Reynolds may be going. He is the chief science advisor to the Secretary of State. Chris Painter is going from the cyber office in state. Liesl Franz is going, who just joined him, as Chris mentioned later. There's a couple of people from DOD that are going, and I think there's a couple of FCC folks going.
DRL.
DRL.
Riley from DRL. He's on our panel. I hope he's going.
So, and I don't know that I got 14 there, but I got pretty good, I think. But I know I haven't gotten everyone. Everyone has to register, so actually they are registering. And so you can go to the website, and there's a page where you can look at everyone who has registered. Registration will close, I think it's about, thank you. So up until that period, you'll know everyone who's registered. I have two questions. Judith, did you have a question?
We want to know, could you repeat again, when is registration going to close? 15th,
October. So I'm going to come to you in just a minute. I just want to mention, I said I was going to say something earlier when I mentioned the number of people who are coming from Google. One of the things that is unique about the IGF to me is that people don't come to the IGF with just an assumption that they're going to listen. And if they start out with that, they quickly find they want to jump in and want to participate. And most of the plenaries and the workshops are built for audience participation, not just for panelists. That is one of the things that the MAG tries to do, is to urge the organizers to make sure there is plenty of time for speakers in the audience to be engaging. So if you're not, for instance, Steve is going, he's a excellent, by the way, interlocutor from the floor, quite someone to compete with. But if you haven't been before, you do actually go to the microphone or get a microphone handed to you so you can make comments. So just to help you think about that, and if you're going, assume you're going to be an active participant. I said I would mention one other thing. ISMA, that is a small association that is incorporated in the United States, a not-for-profit association in the United States, and also has offices in Lebanon, is bringing a delegation of 30 MENA women, a range of business women and social media and civil society activists. So for those of you who are coming, I'm going to be trying to, and we've just now got them all lined up. So I am going to be looking for speaking slots for them, and I'll have their bios and information. We're putting some of the young people on Pam's session, but I'll get back in touch with Freedom House and with others because I think this is an exciting opportunity for us to see, and they will then be interested in trying to. They're interested in having such a good experience that next year they want to submit a workshop proposal. So it's going to be quite interesting for us to see, you know, if they have that kind of good experience. Pam, and then Courtney.
I love these mobile devices.
Late breaking news. VeriSign is definitely interested in looking into being one of the remote hubs, and we're going to be working out the details and can get back to everybody. But we are interested in helping out in that way. The location to be determined, probably in Reston, either at our offices or at a hotel, but those are details that need to be worked out.
Fantastic.
It was funny last year, a bunch of people on the video we saw show up in bathrobes to participate in the IGF.
Let me go here and then to you, Courtney. Thanks.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Franco Sarmiento. I'm currently a Georgetown Law LLM student, and I'm from the Philippines, like Judith over here. I just would want to know if the IGF would be open to accepting students like me who are interested in internet governance. I'm currently taking up global communications and cybersecurity, and would the IGF be acceptable to students like me? That's all.
I'm thrilled to tell you that actually the IGF is replete with students like you, but never enough. But not only that, I'd be really interested maybe in chatting about your also becoming involved in the IGF USA.
Okay, thank you.
Just while we have all these great folks in the room, and since I did the description of the panel first, didn't realize how many people were here, but would like to put out there that as part of what Freedom House does, we bring a delegation of civil society activists from around the world. So we're bringing them especially from countries that are experiencing repression on internet freedom. And so one of the things that's really valuable for those people is to meet with folks from your companies, from your trade associations, et cetera, so that they can make those connections. And especially for those companies who are bringing people from your other global centers, you know, Middle East or North Africa, Southeast Asia, Africa, et cetera. So if you don't mind either touching base with me or my colleague Danilo,
sure,
letting us know so we can organize that, or if you don't mind you know, sharing your contact details, that would be great.
Fantastic. So I'm just going to describe one thing that happens at the IGF and then talk about the roadmap. So apparently at the IGF, we have a virus that is infectious, and people who go to the IGF always want to go back. And this is one of the really interesting things to me about how people get very enthused at the IGF, and most of the people you've heard from today do participate in the IGF. They also have been actively catalyzing the IGF USA, but they're also taking the messages and what happens into other entities and organizations that they're working with. So last year, I was privileged to travel to the Commission on Science and Technology for Development intersessional meeting in the Philippines. And Judith was, of course, she is from the Philippines, and she very graciously came and spoke with the Minister for Science and Technology, Fortunata de la Peña, who was the chair of the CSTD. And prior to that time, Fortunato had not been particularly paying attention to the internet governance issues, yet the WSIS follow-up is part of the work program of UNCTAD and CSTD. So it was a great opportunity for us to talk to him, and my continued conversations with him, I hope, will lead to the Philippines organizing a national IGF initiative next year. So I encourage you all, I really like, Courtney, your point, because I think the more we can make these linkages, the better it is to spread the I shouldn't call it a virus. I need a better phrase. I handed something out to all of you. You should have a copy of this, and we have extra copies if anyone doesn't have a copy. It's right here. Can you? Yes. So this is called the Roadmap: Critical Events with Implications for Internet Governance. Some of you have seen the 4-page version of this, which scared you all to death. So I have cut out the history, and I've gone with the 1-page version that begins in June of this year and ends in 2015 with the WSIS plus 10. I'm not proposing that everything that you need to know about the internet governance related activities are on this calendar. It is color-coded. And one of the really, red is the ITU events, and green are the UN-related events and the IGF. Purple is ICANN. And black, I have up in the top, I have the WITSA Wicket. That is a World Congress on IT that is taking place in Montreal that will bring together something like 1,500 to 2,000 business representatives and some senior government folks. And the topic of internet governance will be discussed in some of the board meeting discussions that take place on the Saturday or Sunday. And I tell you that to tell you how prevalent the discussion and concerns about internet governance topics are. So I hope it's of interest to you, but what it kind of shows you is, first of all, the IGF is a journey, not a destination. It is rechartered for 5 years. We are in year 7 or year 2 of the second 5-year period. And it continues to change slightly. We also had a CSTD working group on improvements to the IGF, and that working group's call for improvements include not changing its nature into a negotiating fora, but trying to bring more meaningful events and activities around the IGF. So day zero is important for all of us because it is a way to bring in additional content-rich information. Next year, we are hoping that we'll be able to bring in even more fact-based and other kinds of events around the IGF. And the IGF next year in 2013 will be in Indonesia. So I think I'm going to open it for one final round of questions or statements, and then we will wrap up. So remember, I need two things from you all. If you're coming with a group or by yourself and you are U.S., I need to have a contact from you if you want me to put you on the list of people to receive the invitation to the Ambassadors event. And all I do is provide the contact information. The invitations come from them. I will mention something, however. The venue is 45 minutes by taxi away from the residence, and so you should just be aware of that. That still, we had that same challenge last year in Kenya, and lots of us went anyway, but I just mention it to you, so if you think you're going to go, you're going to want to plan ahead and taxi pool, so to speak. There are lots of other social events as well, and as I said, I don't have access to them right now, but as I learn about them, I will try to do an update. And if you want anyone else added to the email distribution list, let me know. And thank you all for coming. Now, thank you so much for joining us. Let me say one final word of appreciation to Carnegie and to Diane for hosting. And before you do that, I'm going to ask her to consider hosting a debrief after we all return from the IGF. Thanks to those of you on the phone and particularly for dialing in and listening. And you can email me at marilynscade@hotmail.com. If you need more information, thanks.